This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. Our first story comes from John Steele Adventurer this week. We'll hear The Mission from November 1st, 1949. After that, it's Escape and Jetsam, their story from February 8th, 1953.
Take one man on a relentless search, add a strange and beautiful woman, and the answer in the shifting sands of the desert. That's our story, The Mission, taken from the files of John Steele, Adventurer.
Hello, friends. This is John Steele. We're back this week to bring you another story of action and excitement. So sit back, relax if you can, and listen. Because this is an unusual tale of far-off places. As I've said before, these stories are not mine, but those of friends and people I've met in my travels. Our story this week happened to Mickey Banion, whom I came to know while I was working overseas for the State Department. I've asked Mickey to come over and tell the tale himself. So here he is. Mickey?
Excitement. Brother, that's something I've been living on all my life. Things were never going to settle down for this baby. And that's why when I got in the Army, I signed up for the OSS, Office of Strategic Service, to the highbrows, action and excitement to the guys that were in it. After the war was over, I stayed on with the State Department as a special agent, and I'd had several assignments, mostly routine stuff, and life was getting kind of dull. I just about made up my mind to move on to something else when I was ordered to Ankara. Ankara, during the war, a hotbed of political intrigue where enemy agents rubbed shoulders in the many cafes and where the dirtiest, most unscrupulous politics in the world were played. This assignment I liked. My orders read to report to Steele at the consulate, so I checked in at a reasonable hotel, cleaned up, and beat it over to Steele's office.
Hello, Banion.
Hi.
I expected you 2 days ago.
Well, I got held up in Paris.
Your papers out of order?
Well, call it whatever you like.
Oh.
Okay, how many times does a guy get to Paris?
Washington said you were the best they had.
I must remember to send him an orchid.
There won't be any time for that kind of stuff from now on.
This is a business with me, Steele. When it's time to play, I do it. When there's work to be done, I'm pretty good at that, too.
We'll see.
Well, what's it all about?
Remember an agent by the name of Lockridge?
Yeah.
He was sent out on this assignment 3 months ago.
When did he last check back?
He didn't.
That's what happens when little boys don't eat their spinach, huh?
Something like that.
Okay.
Come over here and take a look at this map.
Yeah.
The area shown here is most familiarly called the Near East.
Amazing.
And since the war, this entire area has been in political ferment.
Go on.
Many of these countries have resorted to free elections to determine their political future.
Yeah.
There are a group of powers that are most interested in seeing these elections go in any direction other than democratic.
And they shall remain nameless.
It goes without saying that we are just as interested in any political future other than totalitarianism.
Obviously.
So far, we've batted about 500.
That's not good enough.
Not when compared to the political character of this area before the war.
I see.
Well, that's the background. Here's the specific problem.
My job.
That's right. An election will be held in this area here within the next 3 weeks. It is vitally important that it go democratic.
Well, what's it look like?
Ordinarily, it would look very good. Its past history has been democratic. It's the popular choice.
Well, then what's the problem?
In these small countries, government structure is often weak, being largely an Arab population. Power has been seized by a strong few.
Go on.
These powerful few have their own standing armies, have the power of life or death over their subjects. They're actually feudal lords.
Even today?
Yes. The strongest of these lords is Rashid Sayed.
Rashid
Sayed. He controls approximately 20,000 votes in the coming election.
Well, that's more than Gallup gave Truman.
Just recently, old Rashid has shown signs of fabulous wealth, such as he never had before. And we believe the powers unfriendly to the democracies are buying off those 20,000 votes.
Any idea how?
Certainly not in cash. Rashid is a sly, wily traitor.
We believe there is some connection between the sudden wealth of Syed and the increased supply of hashish in Egypt and Palestine.
You mean there's that much money in drugs?
Hashish can be bought for $20 a pound here and sold for $200 a pound in Egypt. How's 1,000% profit sound to you?
Oh, I could manage to exist.
Well, that's it. If we discover that Rashid makes his money in narcotics, we can remove him before the election. That's all that's necessary. Without his direction, the election will be honest.
That's all, huh?
Well, except to point out that obviously there are others who would prefer that Rashid be left alone. They may feel rather strongly on the subject.
Yes, I can understand.
Banyan, this is not international politics as the folks back home know it. We throw the book away in this game. When you're being dealt that way, you deal back the same way, only a little faster, or you don't survive. This is buy and sell. Compromise here and win a hand there and try to outthink and outsmart the others or get out of the game. This is the hard, cold, practical side of this business.
Tom, when do I leave?
Tonight.
I just got here.
You've got 3 weeks.
All right, I'll be back in two. And have the most beautiful blonde and anchor awaiting. I never work more than 2 weeks without play.
Good luck.
Good luck to you. You've got to find a blonde in Turkey. I bought Steele's story with a grain of salt. That kind of cops and robbers stuff was all right during the war, but the war was over. Well, 2 days after my talk with Steele, I was in jail Beck. My paper said I was the foreign representative for an American import-export firm, so I had no trouble getting a room at the only hotel in town. The first night, I headed straight for the only bar. I learned a long time ago that more often than not, the local bar is the town's city hall.
Good evening, Effendi. A table, yes?
Yeah, I'll take a table.
Follow, please.
Okay.
Here, please.
No, I like that one by the wall.
Yes, Effendi.
Ah, that's better.
Eat, yes.
Yeah. What do you got?
Effendi.
Look, I don't care. Just bring me the best.
Best, yes.
Oh, and waiter.
Yes, Effendi.
Bring me a drink.
Drink?
Yeah, you know, drink in a glass. Drink.
Drink? My whiskey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hassan does the best he can.
What? Hassan?
Your waiter.
Oh.
You are the American?
Hmm?
News travels fast in Jailbeck.
Especially about strangers?
Yes. You are staring, Mr. Banyan.
Was I?
Surprised, perhaps, to find a European in Jailbeck?
I guess so, especially one so beautiful.
You're generous?
I am honest.
Whiskey, Effendi.
Oh, yeah, one for the lady.
Yes, Hassan. Wine, please.
Well, now, you know my name. I don't know yours.
Everyone calls me Maria.
Is that how it's listed in the phone book?
Pardon?
I said, what's the last name?
Maria will do.
Okay, Simone, Maria, Maria, why not?
Americans have a strange sense of humor.
Well, we wear well.
I've heard.
Wine, Effendi.
Oh, thanks, Hassan. Okay, that's all. I'll beat it.
He is waiting to be paid.
No credit in Jailbeck?
There's an old Muslim proverb that says bad debts make bad friends.
Yeah. All right, here you are, Hassan.
Thank you, Effendi.
Well, here's to a very beautiful...
Are, Maria.
What?
Looking all over for you.
And now you have found me.
So I have. Obviously enjoying yourself. No doubt I'm intruding.
Don't be foolish, Philip. Captain Arnold, Mr. Banyan.
How do you do?
Hi.
Mr. Banyan is an American.
Obviously.
Just arrived in Jailbeck.
Charming.
Oh.
Captain Arnold commands the mobile unit.
Oh, I didn't know that
there were British forces still on duty in the East.
No, that there were still mobile units activated.
The captain commands the laundry unit.
Oh.
Do you mean no, Banyan? One doesn't just pick
up... Sit down, Philip, and stop explaining.
Yes, of course. I stopped by your place.
I wasn't expecting you until Thursday.
I see.
Care for a drink, Arnie?
I won't be here that long.
Well, just being neighborly.
You're here on business, Mr. Banyan?
Yeah.
I thought perhaps you might be just passing through.
No. My firm is interested in importing tobacco.
Oh?
If we can get the right price.
Are you feeling ill, Mr. Banyan?
No, I'm okay.
Oh, a guy named Rashid Syed.
You are pale, Mr. Banyan.
Name of Rashid Syed. I gotta see him.
He's trying to stand up.
Air.
I gotta get out.
Hassan.
Gotta get air.
Oh. The room spun around me dizzily, and then the floor drifted slowly up and hit me in the face. The oldest gag in the book, a dope drink. The next thing I knew, a pinpoint of light shot through the darkness and grew until a white glare burned my eyes. I tried to force them open, but my head throbbed with the pain, so I rose slowly over on my stomach and the light disappeared.
Get up, Mr. Banyan.
Huh?
Get up. You will feel much better.
Oh, no.
Help our guest up, Hassan.
Oh, let go, let go. I can get... Oh,
hospitality, my friend.
Oh, leave me alone.
As you wish. I can get up alone. There. That's better.
Oh, where am I?
That is not important.
You're Syed.
Let me first apologize for my too enthusiastic supporter.
Yeah.
I asked only that you be brought to me.
Oh, what a sucker I was.
The manner in which it was accomplished was entirely their own idea. It lacked the finesse of a craftsman.
Well, that makes my head feel a lot better.
Now, you are recovered now.
Well, I can think anyway.
That is good.
Well, this is quite a layout.
It is enough. A cigarette?
Yeah.
One of my own, you know.
Oh. Hassan, the waiter here, is one of your men, huh?
His entire family are trusted followers. Eh, Hassan?
Yes, Effendi.
Okay, Syed, what's on your mind?
You are to the point, Mr. Banyan.
You didn't bring me here to swap smokes.
Pardon?
Oh, nothing.
We have been expecting you for several weeks, my friend.
Oh.
Ever since the young Mr. Lockridge had his unfortunate accident.
I don't know what you're talking...
No one could explain how he got separated from the rest of the hunting party. We searched for days, but you know the desert.
So?
This is an unfortunate situation. And so unnecessary.
Go on.
It requires all our ingenuity to protect our guests from harm.
Yes, I'll bet.
You're a businessman, Mr. Banyan.
Yeah.
And I'm a man of considerable wealth.
I don't get you.
Hassan. Oh! Perhaps that will clarify matters.
Yes, yes, it does.
I can see how concerned I am for your health, my friend.
So that's the score.
Pardon?
You want to buy me off?
Let us say that I wish to ensure your safe return.
No dice.
Hassan. Oh! This could be settled so peacefully.
No.
I am a very patient man, Mr. Banyan.
You can...
Perhaps we can persuade you to change your mind.
Never
in a million years.
Help our guests.
Oh, let go of me.
It is unfortunate.
You didn't figure this out alone, Syed.
You're taxing my patience, my friend.
Because you're peanuts in this game.
Mr. Banyan.
No, there's an organization behind all this.
I have warned you.
Your brain. You were just...
Hassan.
Front man.
You are as stupid as the rest. Take him, Hassan.
Hassan picked me up, carried me downstairs, and threw me in the back of an old car, and then the big guy climbed in behind the wheel, and we drove off. The car wound in and around the small streets, and I could see the roofs of houses sliding by the top of the door. At last, we stopped, and Hassan carried me into a hut. Tossed me down on what seemed to be a couch and shuffled off into the darkness. He was back in a few minutes with a candle and an old chipped basin full of water.
Lie still, Effendi.
Give me a drink first.
Yes, Effendi.
Oh, that's better.
Hassan, help.
Here, let me throw some of that water in my face.
Oh. Hassan, sorry, hit Effendi.
I think maybe you are.
Hassan, help.
You don't like the boss, huh?
Boss?
Syed.
Rashid Syed, not good man.
If you can say that again.
Effendi?
Nothing. What do you mean, help?
Hassan, help Effendi go back home.
No, that's no good.
No good?
No, Hassan. Why do you want to help me?
Hassan, good Muslim. Rashid Syed, not good Muslim. Rashid Syed, drink whiskey, kill... Hassan, brother, not kill. Hassan, not kill.
Hassan's brother? How many brothers?
No more brother.
Where is he?
Mahmoud, help Effendi.
What do you mean, Effendi?
Americani.
You mean your brother Mahmoud helped the other American?
Yes.
You mean Lockridge?
Yes.
Where is Lockridge?
Dead.
Yeah. Where's Mahmud?
Dead.
What happened?
Rashid Syed is king. He say Mahmud not good man. He put Mahmud and Effendi in sand up.
You mean up to their necks?
Yes, neck.
No. Look, Hassan. Rashid Syed had your brother killed. That's why you want to help me, right?
Hassan, help Effendi go home.
No, I can't go home yet, understand?
No.
Look, I have a job to do.
Job?
Look, Hassan, you know what hashish is?
Hashish, good smoke.
No, hashish is bad.
Bad?
Not good. Rashid Syed sends hashish to Egypt. Understand?
Egypt, yes.
Syed not good man.
Rashid Syed drink whiskey and kill.
No. Syed not good because he sent hashish to Egypt. Now, Hassan, how hashish go to Egypt?
How?
Yeah, how? By camel, by car, by train? Hassan, Rashid Syed had your brother killed. Tell me how hashish go to Egypt.
In can.
What do you mean in can?
Follow, please.
Hassan motioned to the door and I followed him to the car. We drove out through the town to the desert, and after about a half an hour, Hassan pulled the car off the narrow road and hid it in the shadow of a dune. He motioned me to get out and follow, and we walked through the sand for another 20 minutes, keeping in the shadows as much as we could. Then Hassan stopped short of a big dune and put his finger to his lips. I began to remember Lockridge, and I wondered whether this big guy was on the level. I kept watching him for any quick moves, but he got down on all fours and started creeping up the side of the dune.
See, Effendi.
It was an army mobile laundry unit.
Follow, please.
Hassan put his finger to his lips again and started inching down the far side of the dune on his chest. We were almost into the shadow when we saw the sentry round the last truck. Hassan reached up, yanked me by the shoulder, and pulled us both down in darkness. The sentry stopped.
Halt! Who goes there?
Lie still, Effendi.
Hassan, come back!
No shoot, Hassan! No shoot!
Hassan! What the devil are you doing, Haji?
Follow, Effendi. In truck. Hassan, help.
Okay. All right, now you, come on up.
See, Effendi, in Khan.
Gas can. 5-gallon gas can. There must be 100 of them on this truck alone. You mean there's hashish in every one of these cans?
Yes, Effendi, hashish.
Of course, why didn't I think of that? Arnold has free entry into all these countries. Nobody would think to inspect his trucks. Listen, come on, Hassan, we got to get out of here.
Oh.
Come on, we'll grab that jeep.
Huh?
Get into it.
All right,
come on, baby, catch. Come on, run, will you run? As soon as we were out in the road, I checked the gas gauge, and the needle read less than a quarter full. I knew it was going to be close if we made it to Damas. Hassan showed me a road that skirted Jelbek. By dawn, we'd left Syed's town far behind. I'd had time to think, and as far as I could see, there was only one thing to do.
Road not good.
Yeah, and you can see this dust for miles, too.
Effendi?
Never mind. Captain Arnold will follow us, Hassan.
Yes, Effendi.
How many railroads are on Jelbek?
Effendi?
You know, railroad, train, big car on tracks.
Train?
Yeah.
Damas.
No more?
No more.
Oh, I don't know where we're headed this way. This is going to be hard to make you understand.
Hassan, understand.
Look, I want the police to get Rashid Syed. The police, see?
Yes.
Now, I can't do it alone.
Alone?
Yeah, by myself. Need Hassan.
Yes, Hassan, help.
I don't have enough time.
Time?
Yeah, 10 days. Police got to have Syed in 10 days.
Quick.
Yeah, quick. That's it. Thanks, big fella.
Yes, Effendi.
Now, Hassan, come home with me.
Yes.
You're my only witness. That ought to be enough.
Effendi?
Hassan, no hashish in gas can. That puts Syed in jail.
Rashid Syed in jail. Good.
You understand now? Hassan, go home with Effendi.
Hassan, no go Hassan home.
No, I guess you can't now. Look, we go to Damas.
Yes.
Take train to Beirut.
Train, yes.
But we don't get on train in Damas.
Not Dama.
No, outside. We jump on when the train moves.
Outside, yes. Big hill outside Damas. Train go no go quick.
Ah, that's it. Good. Trees up ahead, huh?
Yes.
Must be getting near Damas.
Yes, Damas.
How far?
Effendi.
Oh, I'm sorry, Effendi. By foot. See, foot walk. How long to Damas?
Walk, yes. To sun up high.
Noon, huh? About 4 hours by foot. I'll be able to make it in a half an hour by jeep. Oh, no. Come on, baby. Don't quit now. Come on, sweetheart. Run! Well, I'm out of gas. That's that.
Effendi.
Come on. We may as well start walking. We made it to the outskirts of town by noon. Hassan told me the trains left for Beirut twice a day, and I decided to wait for the night express. We skirted the town, and we reached the hill to the west that would slow up the train and settle down on a grove of trees to wait for darkness. We took turns sleeping, and toward mid-afternoon, Hassan slipped into town to get some food from a friend he said he could trust. When he got back, he told me that Rashid Syed was in Damas and had scoured the town looking for us. About 8 o'clock that evening, we heard the train pulling up the hill, so we waited at the edge of the grove till it got even with us and then ran for it. I watched Hassan swing on board, then I grabbed a rung and pulled myself on. We worked the door open and started down the corridor. I glanced through the window of each compartment looking for one that was empty. Then I found the one I wanted. Mind if we share your compartment?
I beg your pardon.
Don't play dumb, baby. Surprise, surprise. One on me, too.
I don't know what you have...
You helped slip me a Mickey once, remember?
One meets so many.
Banyan, baby. Mickey Banyan.
Oh, yes. The American who became ill.
Yeah. Come on in, Hassan. Sit over there. That's better. Nice and cozy. You mind if I pull down the shades? It's a little more private.
No, not at all.
That's better. Didn't think I'd be seeing you again.
It's not exactly unpleasant.
No, it isn't. I think I'll sit right here next to you. Even cozier.
You do not mind. I think I'll...
Sit down, baby. You and I are going to be traveling companions for a while. Well, it's too bad we didn't meet when I had more time.
Gentlemen would make time.
Yeah, I guess I don't qualify.
You do.
Thanks.
One meets many little boys.
Yeah?
Very few. Many.
You're not particular about the gentle part.
That was unkind.
Is there anything between a man and a woman that isn't?
The right man and the right woman.
Haven't met her.
Are you sure?
No.
Sometimes we are too unwise, too busy to know.
Yeah.
Tell me, Mickey Banner. Once said I was beautiful. You changed your mind.
No, you do.
Do you always try to go through ladies' pocketbooks when you kiss them?
Most ladies carry lipstick in them.
That depends upon the game they're playing.
It isn't polite to point guns.
Perhaps you had better sit over by Hassan.
It's too bad I wasn't a little faster. This might have been an interesting trip. I don't get it.
It's quite simple.
Well, you tell me then, you hold all the aces.
I was sent here to do a job. You upset our plans. I've straightened them out.
You mean you? And...
Yes. It's so strange that a woman should do a men's job.
But
in my country, women work on an equal footing with men.
Okay. And why this cat and mouse business?
I am a perfectionist.
Well, nice to know that I'll die artistically.
Won't be long.
Oh?
Always tell when you're approaching Beirut.
How so?
The train in the tunnel will muffle the shot.
The tunnel. Light switch. Down, Hassan. Keep down. Ah. All right, Hassan. Come on, out this way.
Yes, Effendi.
Gotta get this door open now. All right, as soon as we get out of the tunnel, jump. Now, jump, Hassan. Jump.
We worked our way south all the next day, keeping off the roads and diving into haystacks every time anything moved. By late afternoon, we reached the rendezvous point and hid out in the tall grass of a high bluff overlooking the ocean. We took turns sleeping through the afternoon, waiting for darkness, and then about 8 or 9 o'clock, we made our way down the bluff to the beach.
Take it easy, Hassan.
Yes, Effendi.
It's not much farther. There. That does it. Now, look, Hassan. We got to get some firewood.
Wood?
Yeah, wood for fire, see? Warm hands, fire.
Fire, yes.
And a little pieces, see? Not big, little.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's some. Some more. Oh, yeah, that's it. Hassan, over here.
Hassan, help, yes.
Atta boy, big fella. Down here now. Okay, now, match. Come on, sweetheart. Turn. Ah, caught. Good. Okay, now my coat. Now we signal, see? Boat, pick us up. It's all arranged.
Good, Hassan, see.
Now, watch out there out on the water.
Water, yes.
There, not yet. I'm going to signal again. There. Not yet. Now again. All right, there. Hassan, you hear something?
Back on road.
Yeah, it's a truck. No answer yet. Well, I got a signal again. Come on, will you see us? Look at us. There it is, they see us. All right, now look, we've got to stamp out this fire. Get it out. That's it.
Banyan!
What the?
You were such a nice man.
Oh, come on, Hassan, we got to swim for it. What?
Dundee.
Come on, Hassan, get up.
Not good.
Were you hurt?
Hassan hurt.
Ooh. All right, I'll carry you.
Not good, Effendi.
I can't leave you here.
Go home, Effendi. Go home.
Bunch of maniacs get you to tell you to shred.
Go home.
What kind of a guy do you think I am?
Hassan, no. No help.
Hassan. Yeah. Yeah, I'll go, big fella.
Well, at any rate, I'm glad you got back, Banyan.
Yeah.
This is a hard, dirty business.
It was one right guy. Stepped in the way of a bullet that would have got me.
Yes.
I'm sorry I muffed the hand, Mr. Steele.
You can't win them all.
I suppose that means we lose the election.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
By the way, I had a cable from Washington. They want you on a job back home.
Yeah?
I thought that might be good news.
Mr. Steele.
Yes?
I don't suppose you could pull any strings.
Might be able to. Why? What do you have in mind?
I'd like to stick around for a while.
Oh?
Somebody once told me that bad debts make bad friends. Well, I got a few I want to settle.
I'll see what I can do.
Thanks.
About that bond you asked for. I think that might be arranged, too.
No, thanks. I got a date with a brunette. And this is one I'm going to keep.
The Mission, the story of a man who found you can learn even from defeat. Come back next week, friends. I'll have a fellow who had an unusual adventure fighting every second and tracking down a misplaced time bomb. I like to call it surplus. This is John Steele saying so long and good hunting.
In our cast tonight were Connie Lemke, Ross Martin, and Charlie Holmes. John Steele was played by Don Douglas. The orchestra was conducted by Sylvan Levin. Remember, next week, Mutual presents Surplus, another story of suspense and action from the files of John Steele, Adventurer. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. You are crouched in the center of a barren room, the heat of the tropics numbing your brain, your bare hands bleeding and torn. While facing you, his giant hands reaching for you, is the brute of a man whose life depends upon his killing you. Listen now as Escape brings you John Russell's unusual story, Jetsam.
The pub known as the Crown and Anchor was much like any of its fellow establishments along the Sydney waterfront. It was noisy and ill-lit and always crowded with a clientele that worked hard at being boisterously happy. The liquor was cheap and potent and quickly available. At the Crown and Anchor, there was a little something for everyone. New acquaintances, male or female, old friends to be met, and of course, arguments. Those wonderful, time-consuming, liquor-bred arguments.
What was that again?
I say again. You bloody English think you won the war yourself.
Well, that's a filthy thing to say.
Or maybe you won it yourself in your pretty little Spitfire.
Well, at least I didn't spend my time mucking about in the desert with Montgomery.
No, you don't. Big lumbering The fleet here almost just collapsed. Here, give me a hand, Alf. We'll chuck him out the street.
And now, sitting in the waiting room of Morley and Sons solicitors, Junius Peabody couldn't remember too well everything that had happened. He remembered the Crown and Anchor, and the man with a scarred face, and waking at dawn on the cobbled street, face down in the gutter. But he wasn't too clear on the reasons for it all.
John will see you now, Mr. Peabody. Good morning, Junius. Sit down.
I'm sorry about not keeping our appointment the other day, said John.
It was almost 2 weeks ago, Junius.
Yes, I'm sorry, sir.
I wanted to see you because I've had another cable from your father.
Yes, sir?
Sent along a letter of credit, drawn in the amount of £50. From what he says in the cable, I don't think he expects you to come back to England.
But the last time I wrote, I said I'd be home. I said I'd work for him there.
Yes, I don't think that's of much interest to your father anymore. Would you care to see the cable?
No. No, thank you.
Now, he also has instructed me to advance you no more money under any consideration.
So, I'm not to be a remittance man after all.
Junius, do you have any plans?
I have no plans.
Well, what about your commission?
Who can use a 35-year-old flyer, one that can't even hold a rum glass steady?
Yes, and that's something else, Junius. This drinking of yours...
This is going to be a lecture, Sir John?
Well, in a sense, yes. Now, ever since the war, you've done your best to become an alcoholic. Why?
Why does anyone drink?
Well, may I tell you why I think you do? The war. You're still fighting it. Still in a Singapore prisoner of war camp. Well, you were a good officer and a good pilot, I'm told. You could have gone on if you'd let yourself. Why can't you forget what's behind you? Forget what you went through. Others have?
This is a lecture, isn't it?
Well, you came to Australia at the war's end. You've done a lick of work since.
Now, really, sir...
As well as you could in the money your father sent out here. You've held only one position in all that time, and that you managed to keep for just 3 weeks.
I was out sick in a hospital.
Oh, you were dead drunk in a back street house.
I was out sick.
Call it what you want. But don't use the war as an excuse for your own shortcomings.
Oh, it must be very fine to be successful and smug and righteous.
Now, Junius, listen to me
no,
for a moment.
No, I won't. I'm sick to teeth of men like you and my father. Preaching, moralizing. I'm tired of the lot of you. Now, if you'll be good enough to give me that letter of credit, I will get out of your office.
Now, you're talking like a child,
Junius. The letter, please.
Yeah? Junius, where are you going?
For as long as my money holds out, Sir John, I shall be at the noisiest, filthiest, and most enjoyable bar in Sydney.
And that was the start of a most colossal binge for Junius Peabody. The entries were badly blurred, but he could trace himself up through Brisbane, Port Moresby, Macau. There were assorted voyages and counter-voyages, women's faces, and the cloying aroma of heavy perfumes. There was a hectic session when he and a Norwegian schooner captain hit the bank at Fantan and swore eternal friendship amid champagne baskets. And it was this same captain who landed him finally, the champagne baskets having been emptied, on a small island. And it was on this island that he found a bar where a tall, cynical white man by the name of Bendemeer cashed in the remains of the dwindling letter of credit for the last magnificent splurge. And now, weeks after leaving Sydney, Junius awoke on the wide sandy beach, watching the dawn spread over the Butternut Sea.
Hello.
Hmm?
You don't happen to have a flask or anything handy about you?
Well, if I had one, it would be empty.
Shame it is. I've a notion I'm about to have the phantods.
The what?
Phantods, you know, the creepers.
Oh. Yeah. I could use a bracer myself.
I'm the Sydney Duck. Your name's Peabody.
That's right.
It wasn't half a party you give last night at the Bendemeers.
Bendemeers? It seems to me I was thrown out of there last night. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
You was, and me, and the big Dutchman, Willems. But it was your fault. You started playing Chuck Farthing among his bottles with a bunch of copper spikes. I never seen a man hold his liquor worse.
Well, I paid for it, didn't I? It was my money, and heavens knows you had your share of it.
Well, Lord love you, chum, that I did. Hey, seeing as he threw us out, I suppose your credit's gone.
I imagine. Sydney.
Yes?
What is this place?
This is a beach, chum. And the island's Fufuti.
And what the devil's Fufuti?
3,000 miles from the nearest pub.
I did have some cufflinks and things. I wonder what became of them.
Hey, you got any smokes left?
Oh. Here.
Thanks. Well, you're on the beach now, matey, that's for certain. And you won't like it, you won't.
Do you?
Me, I'm used to it. But look at your hands. Although you never did a day's work in your life with them soft hands. You was probably a gentleman. But you're a beachcomber now, matey, a lousy beachcomber. And you needn't expect me to do no begging for you, for I won't no fear.
Junius turned and examined the features of the Sydney Duck, who was hunched on the sand beside him. The prominence of the nose and upper lip, the thin pink ears, the jutting teeth that gave him the feeble ferocity of a rat. And at the same time, he was conscious of himself, only in a different way. Here was Junius Peabody, washed up on the beach at the far edge of the world, like any other bit of useless jetsam. To stay and to rot.
Pretty low.
Oh, it ain't so bad. Nobody starves here, that's one thing. You can always fall in with a wedding or a birthday or something. Or maybe you come across a new chum with a bit of brass. Some flat who's willing to stand the drinks.
Like me?
Oh, there's plenty like you. The pearl fishing brings them in, you see. When they're stony like you, they usually take a job till they get a chance to get away again. That is, if they're able to do anything at all. What can you do?
That's a good question, Sidney.
Well, what can you do?
I can fly a Spitfire, and I'm a good judge of French brandy.
Huh. That's not much, is it?
Not much.
Hey, yeah, what's the game?
Going to take a swim. Have you had yours yet?
Oh, morning bath on the beach at Fufuti.
Well, you can't tell, Sidney.
You might like it.
Ah, go on. Can't prove that water ever helped anybody. Aye. You really are going in.
Yes, I really am. Keep an eye on my thing, Sidney.
Oh, right you are, me lord. Hope the bath ain't too cold, me lord.
Junius walked down the sand alone to the water's edge and stood looking out to where the sun sent a long, glittering path toward him across the morning sea. And he was suddenly conscious that he made an ugly figure under the clear light. He moved out into the water till it reached his knees. Then something bumped against his shin, nearly tripping him. He could see the object floating nearby. It was a rough lump of some substance, grayish brown, the size of a boy's football. He picked it up. To the touch, it was greasy.
Sidney! Sidney, duck!
What?
Come down here to the surf a minute.
I'm close enough now. You've got something to show me. Bring it here.
This was floating about in the water. I think I know what it is, but I can't quite believe it.
Think you know what is?
This. Sit up and have a look at it.
Hey, boy, the great Lord, it's the stuff. Look at it. All smooth and greasy like. Oh, we ain't struck it rich nor nothing. Oh, no, not much.
But shouldn't there be an odor, a perfume?
That comes later when it's not so fresh, and anybody else would not. Hey, what could this be but ambergris, worth nearly £2 an ounce, right here on Fufuti. Here, let me take a feel of it.
£2 an ounce.
Ambergris is right as rain, and there must be 8-10 pounds here. And half of it's mine.
What?
I say half of that's mine. Ain't I been palling along with you? Wasn't I here? It's a fair divvy. I want me half.
Your half? Nothing small about you, is there? No, my lad, this is my insurance off this island. I'll give you whatever I don't need.
Oh, no, Mr. Peabody, you wouldn't forget an old friend who came to your side when you was on the beach, would you?
Why, you dirty old windbag. You just be happy if you get anything.
Mr. Peabody, I know a gentleman like you who'll do the right thing.
Yes, well, don't you worry, Sidney. You just...
Now, lie cozy, Mr. Peabody. It's a real shame to see a gentleman like you lying all stretched out in the sand. But since you're there, I'll just relieve you of this insurance of yours. And now, I bid you a respectful good day, Mr. Peabody.
In just a moment, the second act of Escape. But first, tomorrow night at most of these same CBS radio stations, hear William Powell in a startling anti-communist drama titled The Man Who Cried Wolf on Suspense. Tomorrow night on CBS Radio. And now, back to Escape.
Why Junius Peabody hadn't been killed by the Sidney Duck's blow at the base of his skull was hard to understand. But it was only a matter of minutes later that he presented himself at Bendemeer's Saloon and General Store. It was the only place Junius was known on the island of Fufuti. And Bendemeer was the local authority. He was at once the best loved and the best hated individual, being police, landowner, merchant, trader, and purveyor of bad alcohol. Junius stood a moment, trying to get his breath, and then...
I've been robbed.
So?
The property of mine, it's been stolen.
Money, this was?
No, not money.
Then what do you care? What do I care? What are you talking about, man?
What was this property you lost?
Well, that's not important to you. I want to know if you're going to do anything about it.
No. Why should I?
But you're the only authority on the island.
That's right. Who was the man who stole from you?
Sidney Duck.
He hit you and ran off?
Yes.
I could help you, but I won't. What? I've seen too many of your kind here on the beach. Drift stuff that gets washed in. You're not worth it.
All right, I'll do this myself since you won't help.
Where are you going?
I don't know, but this island isn't so big I can't find the Sydney Duck.
You go alone to retake this property of yours?
Since I must, yes.
You're a fool. They'll probably kill you.
Well, they'll probably... They?
Those that live at Ten Bow Head, that's where the Sydney Duck will be now. That's where they all go when they must hide because of some minor lawlessness.
The Sydney Duck has something of mine, and I'm going to get it back. And when I do, I'll be in to see you to talk business.
I still think you're a fool.
Bendemeer, last night you cashed in the last of my letter of credit.
That's right.
You were glad enough to help me then.
You had money.
That's the only drive you have? Money?
It's the biggest. But let me tell you more. I don't mind helping a man who is worth something. A man who wants to help himself. But you, I know you're kind. You're filled with rum and useless. You're jetsam. You always will be.
You're very sure, aren't you?
I know you're kind. Pitying yourself. Thinking no one understands you or your problems. So you swill in rum in order to hide. You always will.
I'm going out to Tenbow Head. And I'll be back.
I'll give you a drink if you get back.
It took the better part of 2 hours for Junius to work his way over the lava cliffs and crevices, knife-like and treacherous, to Tenbow Head, or what was better known as the Rocks. And here, his fingernails bleeding, his clothes torn, Junius finally found the Sydney Duck and Willems. They were seated on a small ledge, half hidden by pandanus leaves, overlooking the blue Pacific 30 feet below. Between the hulking German and the little Sydney Duck was the prize, his prize, the gray-brown ball now enclosed in a torn fishnet. Empty-handed, there was no way to take the ambergris from the two of them. Junius crouched low behind the foliage, thinking. And then a plan came to mind, so simple that Junius smiled. With a rush, he cleared the foliage and, stooping, clutched the filled net with one hand. Then, before the two startled men could more than cry out, he dove into the ocean 30 feet below.
Bendemeer!
Coming. I was out in the storeroom and I... Peabody.
That's right. I'm back.
So I see. But not in good condition.
It'll do. You needn't stare. I'm a paying customer now.
As how?
Ambergris. My property. Over 10 pounds of it.
What? Was it this the Sydney Duck robbed you of?
That's right.
And you went out to the rocks to get it back from him yourself?
From them. Willems, the German, was with him.
By yourself you did this?
Look, there's the stuff. Now about that business proposition.
Concerning this?
Right.
How much do you want for it?
1,000 silver dollars or 2,000 chili.
I don't have that much about me. Suppose we say a standing credit for 1,000 drinks instead.
I want money, not liquor.
It amounts to the same thing. By the time you drunk yourself to death, I'd simply have the money back again.
No, it doesn't, because I'm going to leave this island. And to do that, I need money. So let's talk business, Bendemeer.
Not yours to sell, you ruddy thief.
What?
Mr. Bendemeer, this man here. This Peabody robbed me and my partner Willems of that watch lying on your counter there. And if you want to do business, it should be with Willems and me.
Yeah, that's right. That's ours. Now, what do you give us?
I've been told it's not yours.
Sidney, you're a lying little cheat. You know that's mine. I found it.
That belongs to the Sydney Duck.
That's a lie.
Don't tell me.
Oh, quiet! All of you.
Oh, Mr. Benderby, after all, it's our word against his, and that they're two of us.
But what if two of you are lying? How do you suggest it be settled?
Fight for it.
Yeah, fine. We'll go outside, the three of us, and whoever comes back in, it's rightly theirs.
Yeah, good.
The minute I set foot outside that door, you'd have a knife in my back.
Oh, you don't sound as brave as you did before, Mr. Peabody.
Not against the two of them. I'm not a fool, that's all.
Against one, perhaps?
Villains?
Why not? After all, you could kill Sidney with one blow.
You must hate people.
Just weaklings.
All right, I'll fight. And if I win?
I'll buy from you. Sidney, sit down in that chair where I can keep an eye on you.
Yes, all right. Now give it to him proper, William.
There are no rules. Go ahead.
You're big and stupid, Willems.
Now that's enough for you, no? Well, einmal mehr, Kleinchen, einmal mehr.
And so you see, it is easily settled. Sidney Duck.
Yes?
Get your friend out of here. I have business to discuss with Mr. Peabody. You feel better now that you are bathed and whole again, huh?
Now let's get on with it. I want money for this stuff. I want to leave this place as soon as possible.
You can only get off this island when and how I allow you. You see, mine is the only boat, the Likely Jane. You can see her through the window there. A brandy?
I had my final drink in this place last night when you threw me out.
Sure?
Quite.
Well, just in case. Now, let me suggest my plan. The island of Nukava, which I own, is well planted with coconut crop. However, Nukava is on the edge of the earth, the farthest corner, and the loneliest, and the driest. There are 12 Kanaka boys there, but I need an agent, someone I can trust.
Why do you tell me?
A white man could live there if he wanted to, and if he were fit to live at all. Of course, once he was there, he'd be stuck for a year on a coral gridiron. There's not a drop of anything to drink, save water. And that is brackish.
Look, Bendemeer, what about this ambergris? I've got more than 10 pounds of it. Will you buy it?
You can't very well take it anywhere else if I wouldn't buy it. Can you? Now, I'll make you an offer. I'll buy this lump of stuff from you, and I'll buy it either two ways. I'll give you a half interest in Nukava, and you go there at once to take charge as agent, or else... Here is the first of your brandy, and I'll keep you perpetually drunk as long as you last.
Nukava.
Once you're there, Peabody, there's no escape. You'll sit and fry.
What for? Why do you offer me a choice like this?
Because why? It amuses me. Because I please. Because... I know what you'll do.
Yes?
I've been watching men of your sort all my life. And I know just what they're worth. Drift on beaches... Scraps, trash, jetsam, regeneration, rot and drivel. You can't save yourself any more than you could lift yourself by your own bootstraps. It suits me to prove you this way.
Uh-huh. There's your stinking brandy on the floor to say that you're wrong, Bendemeer. You'll lose.
Oh, so?
Yes. I'll go to Nukava.
As my agent?
Yes.
You'll stay and run the island for a year.
Yes, if only to prove there are some scraps thrown on the beach that are worth something.
Yeah. So I see. So I see. The likely Jane will sail within an hour.
Yes, I'll be aboard.
An hour or so later, as Bendemeer watched the likely Jane set a course for Nukava, there was a smile on the face of that remarkable man, curiously unlike that of a loser's chagrin. He was still smiling as he went back to his storeroom to put the place to rights. There was a clutter of odds and ends of cargo from one of his surf boats, which had upset the day before while hauling cargo out to his schooner. Most of it had been salvaged by his Kanaka boys along the shore. But a certain tub containing tallow had lost a part of its contents. However, he was able now to restore the missing tallow. A large lump, weighing perhaps 10 pounds or so.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you Jetsam by John Russell, adapted by Norman MacDonald and starring Ben Wright. Featured in the cast were John Daner as Bendemeer, Lawrence Dobkin as Sir John, and Charlie Lung as the Sydney Duck. The narrator was Edgar Berrier. Editorial supervision is by John Meston, and the special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You are standing in inky blackness, looking up a long flight of stairs, at the top of which lurks something unbelievably evil, while in the moving shadows behind you, coming closer to you, is the shadowy figure of something that could only come from a nightmare.
So listen next week when Escape brings you Anthony Ellis's terrifying story, I Saw Myself Running. Tomorrow on CBS Radio, hear Robert Q. Lewis filling in for Arthur Godfrey, who's off on an Air Force mission. On House Party, another of our Monday through Friday mainstays here on CBS Radio, popular Art Linkletter holds the reins. Don't miss them tomorrow on most of these same CBS radio stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. America now listens to 105 million radio sets and listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. There's more from John Steele, Escape, the Relic Radio Show, and all of the other podcasts at relicradio.com. We also have a Shoutcast stream up and running there with even more old-time radio. Lots to listen to. All available thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back tomorrow with Case Closed and next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.